Agenda item number three.
Board to talk for discussion on state slave legislation.
That's it.
All right, well, on to,
Well, we started already.
And I don't have, there's nothing in here, so. Look at these slides. Usually I do a PowerPoint, but at the point we're at in session with about 20-some-odd days left, things changed so much that once I wrote it down on Friday, it would have been different today. So I'm just going to talk through some things with what's going on in Austin. I think it's safe to say that this has probably been one of the busiest, most involved sessions that VRA has ever had. We've had more pieces of legislation either deal directly with us by name or in some way affect our operations or put new requirements on us than we've had. I guess this is my third session total with VRA. John has no form. So it's been a bit of a challenge. I think that, you know, anecdotally, a lot of what we're seeing comes from a couple of different things. One, you've got a legislative body that is made up of members who, a lot of them are new, a lot of them got elected with an attitude in the electorate of a distrust of government. And so you've got a lot of legislation related to transparency and openness of government, because for some reason, there must be something wrong going on in all these agencies. And, you know, to some extent, it's not necessarily a bad thing to make sure that the public has access. We as an agency do a lot to make sure the public has access and can continue to do more. But I think that's kind of a root cause of some of that. I think specific to VRA, a lot of what we see stems from the fact that we're out there trying to develop water. We're making big decisions. We're doing big things. We're actually trying to be kind of on the tip of the spear, which isn't always a good place to be, but that's where we are. And so we're out there making big decisions. You know, people who sit back and don't do stuff have easy sessions. They do, because they don't ruffle feathers. So I think those are probably the two reasons why we see a lot of stuff related to us popping up. I'm going to talk about, you know, we track thousands of bills during the session. We follow a lot of different things, but I'm going to focus on several pieces of legislation that I think are kind of float to the top for us. Obviously, we have our Possum Kingdom divestiture bills, Senate Bill 917, Senate Bill 918. Those have both passed the Senate. They're over in the House. They've been referred to the House Committee on Natural Resources. Right now, Senate Bill 917 is Costello Island by itself. Senate Bill 918 is Costello Island and the remaining residential leases. We are likely just to move Senate Bill 918 from this point forward, just because it's easier to move one bill, and that has both things in there. In the House Committee, however, we are going to, and this is a recent development as of late last week, we are going to amend into that bill something the board's already approved us to pursue, which is the Set Ranch legislation. We had a very difficult time coming to agreement on that issue. I could get into why, but I don't necessarily have to. We just had some tough negotiations on how that sale process would work out and how we would effectuate the sale of that additional FERC land that's also captive and landlocked next to the current property. We've come to agreement. The Set Ranch folks have agreed to go along with something that we proposed as a compromise, so we'll be adding that in. Again, fair market value, none of that changes. That's all still the same. We wouldn't be pursuing another one. So that'll get amended into 918 in the House Committee, roll it into a substitute, and then our goal is to actually take it to the House Local and Consent Calendar, where it just gets kind of passed by acclamation and have the Senate concur in the amendments, and then it'll go to governor. So that one's moving along relatively well.
What does that do to the value of the Set Ranch by throwing it into there? Does it increase the value, potential value, or decrease it?
I would say, well, obviously, it's additional property, and it's the water property. So my argument to you would be that it increases the value of the overall set, because you're adding in about, roughly another, I think it's several hundred acres you're adding in, and it's the actual lakefront property. So it's going to help it.
I think we've had that valued at, what, $7 million?
I think that's been a guess.
And the tax appraisal, what does that do?
That was really just, we don't have an appraisal, we have not even had an appraisal or anything, so we really, but at some point, I've even forgotten exactly where that is.
No, I, as I say, I just, you know, if we had this in our mind, as the valuation on the tax rolls changed that a bunch, and that's where I was coming from.
Yeah, what we'll likely do is, we don't start the appraisal process until we have an approved survey, but with this legislation potentially now going forward, we could have a process where we get one survey, one appraisal, instead of doing two separate ones, and do the entire deal at once, you know, the current captive and then this additional for.
Well, this would be a fair market value appraisal, not a tax.
That's correct, that's correct.
But now, under legislation, are we obligated to, as we were with?
No, sir, that's only with the leased property, this is unleased land, so it's just like Stella Island, it's land that, I'm not even sure that it actually has an appraisal district value, I can't imagine why it would, because it's unleased, so, yeah, we're not bound to the appraisal district. So that'll be moving forward. So those are actually the two bills that we originated and are pushing to passage, everything else is stuff that got filed that were.
What are those numbers again?
Senate Bill 917 and Senate Bill 918, keying particularly on 918 is the one that's. Now I want to talk a little bit about transparency bills as they relate to us and some of the stuff we're seeing. We have two different bills related to audits or financial reviews. Senate Bill 448, which is by Senator Troy Frazier, that requires or mandates a state auditor's office audit of the LCRA and beyond. It also requires us, or more particular, our customers, to pay for that process. That bill has passed the Senate, it's over in the House, it's been referred to committee. To my knowledge, it has yet to get a bill sponsor over in the House, although I've heard there is one. And has yet to be requested for a hearing. So we're just kind of watching that one. Now, our opinion on it is obviously we are not against greater transparency. If the state auditor wants to come look at us, they can come look at us. Now, it does bother us that we're being required to pay for that process.
So this is over and above the audit that we have?
Over and above the current external financial engineer. Kind of our issue with it is, we're good to do it. It'd be nice if we didn't have to pay for it. Because other agencies that get audited, you know, the state auditor's office has a budget, they're appropriated money, they go audit.
So how much are we talking about?
The fiscal note right now says about $400,000, roughly, which is, you know, our audit currently costs about 97, 98. So we're not sure exactly how much, you know, extra that really is. But I think what they predicted was, you know, John wasn't.
Their estimate was something like 6,000 hours.
6,000 hours.
Put in perspective, our financial audit, which Matt just said costs about $100,000, is about 600 hours. So that's a tenth of that. So I can't figure out how.
Why did Troy pick on us and LCRA?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily say he picked on us and LCRA. I think he's continually picking on LCRA. I'll let Bob speak to that. You know, I think the issue is we're. Both us and LCRA are in his district. So I think, you know, as a fairness issue, if he was going to do one, he chose to include us as well. And Senator Birdwell asked that BRA be added into that bill. So with that request, knowing that it was in his district, he allowed that on.
Yes, sir. One comment that I would have, though, the statement was, we would have to pay for that. We don't pay for any. Our customers have to pay for that, and I don't know that always gets through to the legislature.
Well, I will say this. One of the senators on the Senate committee, Senator Glenn Hager, voted against this bill as it came out of committee. And the reason he voted against it is because, and he made it very clear in the statement he made before the vote, he does not believe this is a fair thing to do to BRA or LCRA's customers required to pay for it. So some members do understand.
This legislation is well intended. There are always consequences, and we've just lost $532,000 a year. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Yes, we just lost that. Now we just had $400,000 potentially added to some $1 million. I hope we don't stay too long today, because the cost of providing water to our customers is just going to go up.
And that's been part of the discussion. The members who have problems with this process have said, look, these guys need to be spending their money on providing water. You know, if we want them to be audited, send in the state auditor, let them audit them, but do it as part of the normal process. And there's a bill close to that to allow that to happen. Yes, sir.
Well, the question I would have is what would we get for a government audit? Right now, we have a qualified, certified CPA that expresses an opinion, and he has insurance. Well, if he doesn't do that properly, there's actually an insurance policy behind that audit.
And I don't know.
We won't have that with the state audit.
I don't know that I have that other than you get transparency.
Well, that's already there.
I do not disagree at all. The one that we do now, we send to the state auditor's office. I'm not sure they look at it, but they do get it.
Well, would this be the state auditor's office who the legislation would require to audit?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Do they actually do it, or they contract out for it?
No, they haven't.
They got that much time?
They're gonna have to hire people. They claim that they have that much time, and if they're being paid for it, then they have. They'll find it.
But it's more than that. It's our staff's time. When you get auditors coming in, you just spend all kinds of time working with them to make sure they understand what you have. So it's more than that, and the state needs to pay for that rather than us if they require us to do it.
Well, then, that's a good point. It brings me to another piece of legislation that's also been filed by Representative Keffer and Senator Birdwell, House Bill 2362. That bill initially required a state auditor's audit of all river authorities. It wasn't mandated, it just allowed it. Okay, it wasn't a requirement. And it did not make river authorities pay for it. It also requires a legislative budget board financial efficiency review, also not to be paid for by the entity being audited, to be paid for by the state. The fiscal note on that bill indicated a cost to the state auditor's office. They said that, you know, we're gonna need somebody to pay for this. So that bill, as it passed committee, was amended to remove the state auditor's office process. And so now it's a legislative budget board financial efficiency review, not required, so not mandated, and you also don't have to pay for it. So that bill is moving. You know, we're obviously more supportive of that one than
and
we
that's
are
all
some of the other. It doesn't single anybody out.
Yeah.
And so it's potential for all river authorities. What's good for one of us is good for all of us. So that one's moving forward, and again, we're continuing to track that one and, you know, work with the author's office, like we said, we would to help it pass. I can't say that I know how good a chance it'll be once it gets over to the Senate, but I do think it'll at least make it over there and potentially get a hearing.
So. Matt, do you think they'll find a sponsor in the House for Fraser bill?
I do think they will. I think it'll be Representative Acock, probably, if I had to guess. And then the last transparency bill I'll talk about is actually a broader bill that's not necessarily just related to river authorities. It's called House Bill 14. House Bill 14 and its companion Senate Bill 14 are the brainchild of Comptroller Susan Combs, and they are massive transparency bills. They're meant to open up local governments to more public transparency, scrutiny, however you want. Couch it, and it involves school districts, hospital districts, counties, cities. I mean, it's every local government entity that you could possibly have. Specific to special districts like us, there is a section in there that requires you to do every six year self-evaluation, where you essentially look at your mission and make sure that you're accomplishing that mission. Now, as the bill was originally filed, it had you make a decision on whether or not you should dissolve yourself if you aren't accomplishing that mission. That has since been taken out. And what you gotta understand is the real impetus for this bill is actually smaller districts, particularly MUDs. That's really who they're after. But when you define a special district, you include all of us, and we're made aware that, hey, you know, you get us with this. They're like, great, glad we got y'all. It's kind of like that, but again, without the dissolution part, it really is. It's a self-evaluation. You know, we are in no way against it. We'll do it. I mean, we have no problem with looking at whether or not we're accomplishing our mission, because I think that we can pretty much say that we are. I don't think that'll be a problem. That'll be something that we'll have to bring to you all. You all will have to adopt it every 6 years, so should it pass, it's something to be able to look out for. Getting away from transparency, we have the dock fee bills. We've already talked about those. Those should not need to move forward at this point, given the fact that we've addressed the issue. We'll be talking to the auditor's offices and making them aware of the fact that, you know, that's something that we were already looking at before you filed those bills, something that, you know, we were already talking about internally, and then we brought to our board and they've addressed it. You know, therefore, there's really no need to discuss these at all. I want to talk a little bit about a bill that relates to our sovereign immunity with some of our contracts. It's one that we spent quite a bit of time working on in the Senate, so I want to bring it to your attention. Senate Bill 958, also introduced by Senator Troy Frazier, essentially waives sovereign immunity for all special districts or authorities. So that's not just river authorities, it includes water districts, MUDs, SUDs, whatever kind of district there is, for contracts related to the generation of electricity. The argument being that, you know, the electric market in Texas is important. They need certainty with regard to where they get the water, and they need the ability to essentially enforce their water contracts in the courts. I would tell you candidly that the impetus for this bill, which was surprising for us, was our litigation with BEPC, Brazos Electric Power Cooperative. The argument was made that while that wasn't a water contract, it would not have even been affected by this bill. The fact that, according to BEPC, we quote-unquote walked away from that contract gave them a lot of heartburn, and they felt the need to go to the legislature and pass a bill related to water contracts so that we could no longer walk away from contracts. Now, you guys know that we did not walk away from that contract. We went through lengthy negotiations to try to salvage that. BEPC walked away from that contract and sued us, so we know our side of the story. But that aside, that doesn't necessarily always play well in Austin. That bill, as it was heard in the Senate, we thought was very problematic. It had endless or open remedies in terms of what they could get in litigation, so the remedies were capped. Usually when the legislature waives sovereign immunity for local governments, they cap remedies. They put, you know, some sort of, you know, borders on what you can get. And so we worked with the bill author's office and with the committee chairman, Senator Robert Duncan, to put some sort of limits on what they were able to get. We also put some language in there making it clear that this bill couldn't be used as a way to open up the old BEPC case and re-sue us. So we made sure to put some language in there that made it clear that they can't do that. So the bill was voted out of committee, left the Senate unanimously, which most of us do. And it is over in the House. It's been heard in committee and is awaiting action. So I guess the bottom line on that one is if it is to pass, it's livable. We still don't think it's good policy, but it's livable. So it's something that we can be okay with. House Bill 2452, that is the bill that requires the appointment of a water master on the Brazos River Basin. That's been heard in House Committee. It's been passed out of House Committee. As it was passed out of the committee, it was amended to cap fees for ag users, for small users. I think it's 150 a year or something like that. So it's been amended to basically say that they still have to pay for the water master, those water right holders, but they don't have to pay as much as everyone else. That was meant to get some of the ag guys comfortable with the bill. I don't know that it necessarily has gotten them comfortable with the bill. I still think this bill has quite a bit of opposition. Our position on the bill was as we've been throughout this entire process, neutral. We do think there are some stipulations that should be required in the creation of a water master, but those are the kind of things that are going to be discussed in the SOA petition process, which is currently ongoing. We'll talk a little bit more about that later. And even if this bill were to pass, there would still need to be a rulemaking wherein we could try to assist on some of these types of stipulations. But that's something that the bill's going to struggle in the Senate, I guess is the best way to put it. I don't think it has as much support in the Senate as it has in the House. And then I'm going to finish up by talking about bigger picture issues as they relate to water policy. State water plant funding, which has been a big issue. You've seen a lot of news about it. It's been in papers. Leadership's talked about it. It's something that at the beginning of the session you would have thought was going to win. You had the governor saying, hey, let's take money out of rainy day funding. You had the speaker doing it. You had the lieutenant governor. You would have thought that that would have been, you know, 100% that it was going to pass. Not so. It has not moved forward as well as I think most folks thought it would be. And I think the main hang-up on that is on the House side. But it's not just conservative members who don't like the fact that, you know, we're spending $2 billion on water, you know, that's too much. It's not just that. You've also got Democrats in the House and to some extent the Senate who aren't necessarily pleased that they're not taking money out of a rainy day fund or more money out of a rainy day fund and spending it on education. So kind of their opinion is, well, I'm not going to vote for this because you're not putting any money into education. So those bills have not, again, not moved forward as fast as everyone thought they would. And there's still an open question as to whether or not they will. The House has passed House Bill 4, and House Bill 4 has made it over to the Senate. The important thing about House Bill 4 to remember is it doesn't appropriate any money. House Bill 4 sets up the fund that will eventually fund the state water plant projects, but it doesn't put any money into that fund. It just creates it. That House Bill 4 passed the House, went over to the Senate. It has been passed by the Senate committee, but it by itself also has controversy because there's language in it now that restructures the Water Development Board, takes them from a 6-member volunteer board to a 3-member full-time board. There are some members of the Senate and the House that are not comfortable with that. So there's going to be controversy on that one. House Bill 11, which is the bill that actually appropriates money to that fund, is on the House floor today. So we'll know its fate today. We'll know whether or not the House is able to get enough votes to pass it. They need 100. 150. That's a high bar. So then the last thing I'll talk about, another funding mechanism for the water plant. The Senate has passed SJR1. It's a joint resolution, which is basically a ballot issuance. It's a way for them to put something in front of the voters. SJR1 appropriates money from the rainy day fund to transportation, water, and education. And I think the total is roughly $7 billion. It appropriates $2.2 to education, $2.9 to transportation, and $2 to water. That's kind of the fallback, I think. It's kind of the punt. Okay, well, if we can't pass this, you know, if we can't appropriate the money, we'll see if the voters want to do. The Senate did pass that, but again, they've got to get 100 votes in the House to pass it, and I don't know that they'll be able to do that. So I guess I'll summarize that by saying water funding, which everybody thought would be a no-brainer this session, is not so much of a no-brainer. It's going to be tough.
Did you say they said education, water, and
transportation. So I'll stop there, and I can answer any questions. It's seven billion.
Legislation about the oil and gas companies paying for the water resource that they're utilizing that gets taken out of the system?
There hasn't been anything filed on that. There's been some legislation related to industry generally, potentially doing more reporting and trying to do more analysis on how they can use less water. But, you know, given the strength of the oil and gas lobby, there hasn't been a whole lot of success.
You know, the difference with the oil and gas companies, though, is they take that water resource, that fresh water, and they use it, and we never see it again. It's re-injected into a 10,000-foot disposal well. Unlike many users, they're still keeping the water in the system. And the oil and gas company should pay something if they're going to use, you know, 6 million gallons of well and they're drilling thousands of wells. It's taken a lot of water resources out of our system.
I agree. Yeah, there's been discussion on it, but not a whole lot of action.
Yeah.